KQSS Miami.
And Mary Gomeros is now with us. And how are you?
Doing good.
Well, good to hear from you. What's new?
Well, here to give my monthly report.
We're here to hear it.
I know you talked a little about social media and everything, and there's really kind of been some misunderstandings on social media lately about zoning codes and conditional use permits. There's been a couple of hearings, so a lot of misinformation out there. People really don't know the true meaning of zoning and conditional permits. So I'd really like to take a moment to clear the air a little bit, put some accurate information on these important topics. You know, we have a planning and zoning committee that they're volunteers, and they do a good job. You know, their job is to make a determination, a recommendation to council on a zoning or a conditional use permit. And really the experts for the city really is our zoning administrator, which is an expert on zoning, and then we have our city attorney actually that, you know, works with him. They present the facts as needed for the committee to make a true decision or decision, you know, they're comfortable with. So a little bit about zoning codes are laws set to regulate how the land can be used. They ensure that the different types of land, such as residential, commercial, and the industrial areas, are properly placed to avoid conflicts. Zoning codes are essential for maintaining public safety, promoting community health, and protecting property values. There are in some cases, though, that a property owner may wish to use their land in a way that does not fit within a standard zoning code. In these cases, they can apply for a conditional use permit. We call it a CUP. Mm-hmm. And this is basically essentially a special permission granted by the city with clear conditions to protect the neighborhood and maintain the integrity of the zoning laws. A conditional use permit really allows specialized use on a case-by-case basis if it doesn't negatively affect the surrounding community. And these conditions are also outlined within the zoning code. You know, our city staff works with the applicant during the CUP application process to find ways that they can work within the zoning code to make these projects fit within the zoning standards. So before it even goes to planning and zoning, they work with the applicant and all the details out. So when it gets to planning and zoning, what they do is they either voted yes or no with the CUP in place. They have no, the planning and zoning has no authority to change any of the CUP. It's already worked out with the applicant by the time it gets to them. So then this CUP, then it acts as a contract between the local government and the property owner, and providing the flexibility in land use, but also maintaining the integrity of the zoning laws. So that's kind of the explanation in a nutshell. You know, it's zoning is it's not something that we make up. I mean, there are zoning standards. We adopt them as council for our community. And then we try and work if there isn't, like I said, if there is a situation where it doesn't fit in that zoning code, we can work with them and work with them with a CUP. Now, if they violate the CUP, in the process, it can be revoked by the city.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me ask you something.
Okay.
Because planning and zoning here, actually what they're doing is they're codifying things. Now we get to code enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I assume code enforcement is enforcing what planning and zoning has codified.
Code enforcement is really a different animal. That's something that people have are wrote up or
where I'm going with this is that what I hear, you know, not so much social media, but mm-hmm. just on the street and things like that, is most of what I hear, the complaint would come down to code enforcement more than planning and zoning. And the big issue that people are, you know, just up in arms about when they are upset in this area is the selectivity of enforcement. Like, suddenly they're told, you have to do this, mm-hmm. but they look in 11 other people who are in the their same situation are not getting that. And that, you know, that creates the ill will that you're talking about, I think, that people are up in arms and just yelling and screaming because it's not uniform. So when that happens and somebody, you know, here's some code enforcement, I've got to do this. Well, they're not likely to do it if no one else has had to do it. And that's, I understand their ire.
Yeah, and the residents need to understand every situation is different. There may be other properties in the process of violation and court hearings that they're not aware of. That's not a public process that's let out there. But if code enforcement is made aware of a code violation, then they follow it up at that point. Or if they see a code violation, they follow it up. But it's not having to do with planning and zoning. Planning and zoning is regulated by the state. We adopt it through city council, and that's how it's enforced for zoning codes and CUPs. But the code enforcement is for blight and for violations of our city code as far as, you know, different types of situations. But every situation is different. Every situation. And I think that's where people, you know, I think in some zoning, and I'll talk about the one that I read on it, and I don't really answer social media because I can say something and somebody can manipulate it to right. fit their agenda.
Right.
So that's why I ask people to call me personally. I will meet with them. I will explain to them situations, but they really can't judge. They see other properties that maybe they're being forced to do that other properties aren't, but there's different situations in everything. So really, they need to understand the full process before. And I know sometimes it looks like, why are you picking on me and not somebody else? But
well,
every situation is different.
And sometimes you'll get a notice. In fact, somebody came to me recently I said, hey, I can't do anything. I referred them to you. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that they were told, in this case, you have to pave this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing in the code that they had to pave it. And they said, we've gone through it, we've looked at it, they're saying we have to pave it. I said, well, you know, got to go to the city and talk about it. But in that type of a situation where suddenly code enforcement comes to you, gives you an edict to do something, and you can't find anything in any code that backs them up, what do you do?
Well, I don't think they're going to issue a citation or...
What if they have?
They have, then there's a backing with the code. And if you're talking about a certain piece of property that a parking lot was is being asked to asphalt it, that's a C3 zoning. It's in a floodplain, flood zone. And really, a C3 of a parking lot in that area is, I only know minimal. I'm not the expert on zoning, but that is required to be asphalt.
What
because
about the
you're
others
dealing
that
with
aren't?
The what?
What about the others that aren't?
Yes. Okay.
Why isn't everybody getting that notice?
Because the way I understand it, if you talk about another property, they've been a business. Say there's a business that's been there prior to, I think 1998 is a key date. And they have not changed, they have not closed down, they have been continuous as a business, then they are not, and the word people use grandfather, it's not grandfathered, they have to be compliant. They are illegal compliant, I think is the wording. But there's a lot of properties that in the city that have been operating and haven't changed any type of business. Now, if you look at properties like by Wells Fargo, or you look by Dollar Tree, now those are dirt lots, but they're not being utilized for parking. If somebody is to come in and start a business in any of those properties there, they will be required to asphalt those also because it's a new business. They have not been a business there or a continuation of business there.
Yeah, the instance I'm talking about, again, I won't divulge the name, obviously, mm-hmm. and again, I couldn't give them advice. I directed them to the city, but is a situation where it's a lot that's not being used for anything. And so it's not like it's a parking lot or anything like that. It's a vacant lot. And they were edicted, you will pave this.
Okay.
And so, you know, I didn't know where to go with it. But, you know, since you brought it up, what I can tell you is there are people who are just screaming. And it's not a simple situation of we don't understand. It's not a black and white. It's obviously you're describing very much shades of gray. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. But there's got to be some way for people to have some type of a redress to get some information rather than just have to call a lawyer.
And they do. They if they go through the process, they're working with our zoning code administrator, and that's Dana. He's the one that walks them through the process, makes them understand what the code is, and then they work on a solution. And that's where you come up. If it's not zoned for it, then they have to come up with some kind of CUP to allow it to be within that zoning area. I don't want to comment because I know which property you're talking about.
I don't think you do. I think you're going in a different direction.
Well, the property I know is a business for a parking lot.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that one. That's not
okay,
it, by the way. No, we're not talking about the same thing.
Okay. All right,
but yeah, no, I don't know if they're having issues about it or not, mm-hmm. but I am absolutely aware. And that business changed hands recently. And of course, they are subject to whatever the current code is. I get that. It's not that.
Well, I would get with our city development team. I would get with our zoning administrator, code enforcement, because they can meet with them, ask these questions, and make sure they have the right information. That's all I can recommend. I recommend that to anybody. You know, if they're going to start a new business, a project, purchase a piece of property, or they have questions on zoning or permits, make an appointment with our community development team. They have everybody in the room at the same time, so they're not meeting one here, one there, and another day. They will give you all the answers they need. I just don't, in these situations, they should get the answers from our staff to understand their situation.
So, bottom line, let's say you've got a piece of property and suddenly you've just gotten something from code enforcement that you have to do something, and you're saying, no, I don't have to do something. I don't agree with this and all this. They can go and ask for a hearing directly.
Well, they can go and set up a meeting with community development.
No matter what. Okay.
If you're interested in buying a building downtown or anywhere, I would set up a meeting with our development service team, because there could be some situations that you're not aware of. You know, a realtor is not going to really indulge a lot of the things that may be happening on that piece of property. So they could give them information that may save them from getting into a business that may cost them more money than they really have.
Well, again, in this case, it's not a business. It's just somebody who owns a lot, has owned a lot for quite a while, nothing's on it.
Uh-huh.
But they have the right then to go to community development and say, I need a meeting on this.
Yep. And and if they own the lot, the way I understand it, if they own the lot and they haven't done anything with it, they aren't changing anything
Correct.
With it, then it's just like, it would be a property like Fry's. It'd be a property like Dollar Store. They will not have to do anything until somebody opens a business there.
No, I get that, and I know exactly what you're saying, but that's where what I'm going to go back and say, hey, what you need to do is ask for a meeting with community development.
Call development service, call Tony Manfredi, make an appointment with the development service team that you want to meet with them, you want some clarification on what you're talking about,
right.
Clarification on what is really needed on this piece of property.
Right, okay. That's
what I would tell them.
Yeah, and that's a way to go. And I think that a lot of the things you're referring to in social media is people don't feel they have a way to go. They basically have a real problem with code enforcement, and they're not getting alternatives to them. So of course the alternative is just get on the on the internet and bleed about it.
And they should get alternatives. They should get options. And if they don't, then they can contact me and I will follow it up.
Right.
But they should be able to have options and explanations done on what is being, you know, actually said. But they got to understand, they got to comply with zoning and with ordinances and everything else. I mean, it's not just, you know, we have continued to move forward with our city to make it progressive, professional for the future.
Mm-hmm.
We have not, and I'll admit it, our city, because I worked for them for 30 years, we did not have the capacity, the resources to really enforce a lot of the things that we did. And a lot of the times we weren't doing, mm-hmm. you know, it was a good old boy system. where it was a verbal communication. It was a there was nothing written, nothing documented. Now we have the capacity, as we move forward, that we make sure that everything, all these meetings and stuff, are documented, recorded, and given copies so everybody understands the situation that they're in.
All right. Yeah, and I can understand also one of the things you can't control, and we talked with this about Tim in the county too, is there's a lot of blight situations where it just can't be addressed for a variety of things, including state law and the way the state interacts. And so when somebody's sitting there and is surrounded by nothing but blight in the worst possible sense, and then they get a code enforcement thing, they're scraping themselves off the ceiling.
Exactly.
And I get that.
I agree with that too. And I think so. A lot of the situations are family members that own these properties, or people that don't even live here, and then it takes forever, it takes years to try and, if you try and get a property and try and do things, and then you put a lien on them, it takes years to even get to that process. But it is not only in the city, it's countywide, it's everywhere.
Yeah, county especially, and it's a situation we were talking with Tim about where it's downright dangerous in fire season when you've got absentee owners that fell to some family member. Maybe they're keeping up the taxes because they don't, but beyond that, they know nothing.
Exactly.
They don't want to know anything. And I like what Tim is working on to make whoever pays the taxes responsible for the property, because right now they're not. So, it's like I say, this is all shades of gray. And when you have shades of gray, you're going to get misunderstandings.
And like I said, that's why I say I don't know the situation you're talking about. I think I really encourage everybody or anybody that has questions, make an appointment. Make sure you understand it, you know, and our team, I have confidence our team is out there making sure that they can, whatever situation you're in, making it work for you for the future. And if there's zoning, permitting, or certain situations, they should be explaining that to you in the process.
Good enough.
Okay.
So what else?
All right. We heard a presentation from our community development director and building inspector, Tony Manfredi, on a building code. They call it code effectiveness grading schedule. And that's having to do with insurance services organization, ISO. Our department, city's department, has never been audited. And I didn't even know there was an ISO rating for building code. I knew there was for fire because I went through several of them to determine what our ISO rating was. And in fire, it has to do with communication, training, equipment, water supply, pre-plans, a lot of stuff. With building, it's really a comprehensive review, and it includes building code amendments, commitment to code enforcement, permitting process, inspection process, policies, zoning, municipal codes, staff, and training. So everything that we were audited on this ISO is something that we've been building and developing for the last couple of years. It's even upgrading our building code and our fire codes up to current, up to 2021. You know, we would have been dinged pretty bad if we had 2001 building codes when they came and did our auditing. So we were proud at the end of it that we scored a 4 on it, which affects the insurance rate not only for residential, but for commercial. And according to insurance companies, anything between a 1 and a 5 is an excellent number. I mean, they don't grade it if you get a 3 or 2. If you get a 1 or 5, you get the rating that the lower cost. So if we wouldn't have had the staffing now, what I'm talking about, a development service team, if we didn't have upgraded our building code, if we weren't enforcing code, if we weren't enforcing zoning, we would have truly been dinged on that, and it would have cost our residents more, you know, in the end, as far as the insurance. So, you know, when we talk about, and the other thing, when we talk about all these things we're doing, code enforcement, people don't like code enforcement, but code enforcement came to the city back in 2016, I think, our council back then, you know, they were tired of seeing the blight, and the county now has a zoning, I mean, code enforcement, town of Miami now has it, but people complain about it. But there are areas that need to be cited. People need to be cited if they don't clean up their property. Bottom line, it's you know, if we always heard our city looks so filthy, dirty. people driving the corridor. We'd ask developers. And so we did something about that. The city, the town of Miami, the mines, the hospital, we hired the Allegiance. That we pay them on an annual basis, that they stay on the roadway. They do an excellent job. And you can see the difference of the corridor between Miami and Globe now that it's cleaned up. Because before, it was full of weeds and trash.
Right.
ADOT doesn't keep up with it.
Right.
It doesn't happen. So we wanted to make sure that that highway, at least if they're driving into our cities, that they're seeing that that's clean. We need to do the same with our residents. You drive into some of these residential areas, and what are people going to do? They're going to get discouraged of what they look like. But we need to take responsibility. We need to be accountable for ourselves. And I know there's some exceptions out there. And in those cases, we need to step up. We have people that are disabled, the elderly. We need to help them out also.
Of course.
In whatever manner we can.
I think the biggest issues, and there is a lot of blight, period, is from, as we were saying, the absentee owner, the person who no longer is living in that dwelling. There's nothing more off-putting than driving down a block and you're seeing, you know, three-quarters of the houses are just pretty much look like they're abandoned. And that's a problem that you can only go so far.
Exactly. And those are difficult ones. But what we can also, we can only say that it's people that don't live here. We have people in our community that live here, and they need to be accountable. They need to take the lead and clean up their properties. And, I mean, you can drive anywhere you want and see a lot of it in our residential areas. I mean, we need to really have pride in where we live. If we don't have that pride in where we live, then it's not going to happen. And that's where people need to step up, and not only that live here, but investors or people, family members that don't live here, we need to make sure that that's we enforce
the court. It's a societal problem.
Yep.
You know, I used to drive from Maine into New Brunswick, and you'd go to places like Presque Isle, and when you're crossing the border, Maine just looked blighted as could be. I mean, just run down, dirt everywhere. You crossed into New Brunswick, and it was like pristine. It was like it was a postcard. Mm-hmm. And the difference is, like I say, societal. It's attitude. You cannot legislate attitude.
Yep. And that's a shame, you know, but that we need to change that. We just can't continue. And that's what we've been trying to do is, you know, change is hard. Change is difficult. We are changing how we do things in the city of Globe that we didn't do 10 years ago. We're upgrading to make sure that our city and this council is set for. We haven't changed our vision. We wanted to build that strong economic base, make our city professional. And moving forward and increasing our revenue. We have to increase our revenue. We can't do anything if we don't increase revenue.
Of course. So what's on tap for that? What are you working on for increasing revenue?
Well, and my next month I'll have our tentative budget.
Okay.
What we have, I'll have a full report. We just adopted our tentative budget.
Good.
We've also adopted a policy for contingency funds. So meaning that we have a policy that we will have money put away that we cannot touch, just in case there is an emergency or something. But I will explain that fully, how we'll move forward. We're also working on our priority this year is our SAPs. We need a new fire truck,
yes.
A ladder truck. We need a $2.4 million. We need a new fire station, $13 million. We can't just continue to do the same things we did in the past, and that's what we need to change the attitude from people. We cannot continue to run our city the way we ran it in the past. We need to be progressive, and I'll tell you, our staff works very hard. You know, we may make the decisions and get the credit or not the credit, but our staff works very hard. They have bought into our vision, and they every day are their boots on the ground. Our police, fire, public works, our administrative, I'm telling you, code enforcement, all these are the boots on the ground, and they're the ones that make it happen. And we can't stray from that. We got to make sure that we continue to move forward on what our goals are for the future for our city.
All right.
I attended the APS town hall they had last Thursday, and I was a little disappointed. You know, that was out in the media. It was publicized pretty much. People had a lot of questions and comments, and I think there were maybe 20 people there.
I'm not surprised.
Yep, and this was for Globe Miami. This was for Top of the World. I mean, people need to understand this plan could happen And then once it does happen, they're going to say, why didn't we know anything about it? It's been in the paper. It's been on the radio. I've advertised it. You know, you need to know if you're in that area, that if it happens, that your power is going to be shut off. And it could be shut off for 24, 48 hours. It
could be shut off indefinitely.
Yeah, you bet. So we need to identify these areas that are critical for us, people on oxygen, people that are disabled, the elderly. So it's important. You can still go on the APS website, and you can get all the information you need. You need to apply to, you can get the notifications for APS. If they are going to shut it down, they're supposed to give us a 4-day notice. But there is still information out there.
Yeah.
And but people need to come out and understand it, ask questions, and that's what this was about.
Yeah, particularly if they're power dependent, like you say, somebody on a ventilator or something like
you
this.
Bet.
They need to, in advance, have some provision for that.
Yep.
You know, bottom line is a lot of us look askance at the idea of what they're doing anyway, because, of course, it comes from the lawsuits in California, and we get that. But,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, don't you people dare present this as for the good of the community. It's for your economic good alone.
Yep.
I understand that. But nonetheless, we're not going to change it. It's here.
Yep.
They've got the Arizona Corporation Commission backing on this. We're stuck.
Yep.
So it behooves us to understand what this is.
Yeah. The key is we need to prepare for it if it does happen. We're hoping it never happens. We hope we get the rain, that we don't get in a situation where it does. But this is the future.
Absolutely.
This is the future. The wildland season is not seasonal anymore. It's year round.
Sure.
And we need to be prepared as a city, as a community, as a state to really address it. And that's part of a mitigation plan in the process.
Yeah, and if you're truly power dependent, you know, like life or death power dependent, it's also time to see if you can budget for a generator.
Yep.
Because there are things that, you know, the city can't do for you in this kind of a situation.
You bet. And really the main areas, you know, like the fire, police, the jails, the county, the hospitals, you know, they all have backup generators.
Oh, of course
those aren't the ones. It's those people that within their own residence that are going to need those assistance.
Yeah, and I should be thinking now in terms of generators.
Yep.
They've never been more affordable.
You bet. Yeah, people with wells, they depend on power.
That's right.
So there's other, you know, other things.
Right.
There's a lot of things to really that come into the mix.
Yeah, absolutely.
We also approved a grant. We asked our staff to move forward with the Arizona Department of Transportation, and this is a Broad Street Sidewalk Replacement Program. Mm. And the amount of this grant is $1,091,810, and it has a city match of around $60,000. This is to move forward. We already finished the design. We finished the design last year. We were awarded funding from the state for $200,000 to complete a study and the design of the downtown. And we have a lot of bad sidewalks in our downtown area. So this will help us address a lot of those areas that are you know, uneven or high or whatever, but it's a full grant program. And we're hoping, they said, as you move forward, if you have the design already, you move forward. If the funding is there, that you should be able to get it. We're hoping that we get that. We also completed the installation of the outdoor adult fitness equipment for the public to use. And this equipment is located above the skate park, next to the basketball courts and tennis courts. And we poured a big slab. And it has various, I went up there, lots of exercise stations that anybody can use for strength, flexibility, or cardio. And, you know, we really want to thank BHP Copper for providing the funding for this equipment.
Yeah.
It's about a $100,000 investment.
Wow.
And we're hoping that people don't destroy it. You know, it's outdoors.
Oh,
and we're hoping that, you know, we see it all the time.
Yeah. And of course, when it's outdoors and you're talking about exercising, it's like, not this week.
Yeah.
And not with this heat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And unless you do it early in the morning or late in the evening.
Well, even with that lately, this week, when we're seeing triple digits,
it's been tough.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I got on my report is the Coffee with the Mayor. Again, it's June 18th, this week at 1 p.m. again, Copper City's Coffee.
Okay.
Again, I invite everybody to come out, ask questions. You know, if I don't have the answers, I will get them for you.
Okay.
This last meeting, I was surprised Richard Rosales, who's with APS, was in town. He came to the Coffee with the Mayor, and he explained it to those that were there.
Good.
And we had about 14 people there.
Good.
And then we also had, she saw it on my Facebook post, the liaison representative with Congressman Eli Crane.
Uh huh.
And she lives in Tonto Basin. She's responsible for this area.
Good.
So she came and she introduced herself and talked a little bit about things, some things that are available for residents within our Globe Miami community too. So it was good. So it's getting out there. The word's getting out there. And we're getting more people. I'd like to have more people come in when I'm there and just give some more information for the residents besides hearing just me.
So June 18th, Copper City Coffee. What time?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Be there or be square.
You bet.
Right there on Highway 60. Easy to find.
You bet it is.
All
and
right.
Yeah, and they've been very good, you know, and it gives us a space at least to congregate and and be able to hear each other is the other thing when we do these.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming.
You bet.
So we'll see you next month, and that will be on the 14th, July 14th.
July 14th. Okay.
All right. Looking forward to it. All right. So that was Al Gameros.
Thank
and,
you.
Of course, that will replay on KJAA at 8 a.m. Sunday morning and be available for download later this week in perpetuity on KQSS.net.